Good evening, everyone. This is Reverend Jennifer Hope Kotler, and you are listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. I'm joined tonight with my co-host, Rebecca Stevens. Hey, Rebecca.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
It's great to be on live tonight. We are actually not on live. I take that back. We are pre-recorded, so on a normal evening, we always hear on the second and fourth Monday of the month at 8 p.m. Tonight, it's July 14th at 8 p.m., and you're listening to a pre-recorded version of Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. Our next show on the fourth Monday of the month at 8 p.m. is going to be on July 28th, and we are looking forward to the possibility of having Jason Herod, who is a singer, songwriter, musician, joining us on that night. He was with us at the Wild Goose Festival. And tonight, I am really excited to be joined by a good friend and colleague, Russ Jennings from Common Soul Productions. I just happened to see Russ at the Wild Goose Festival, and he was mentioning a new podcast that he's getting up and off the ground, and we're really excited to have Russ with us this evening. Good evening, Russ. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Jen. Good to hear your voice.
Hi,
yeah,
Russ.
Great to be on.
And hi, Rebecca.
Great to be on with both of you. Russ, can you give us and our listeners a little feel for, you know, your journey, where you have come from, what has sort of brought you to this point, how you've gotten involved in doing the kind of, you know, video and audio production work that you do, the stuff that you've been doing with Wild Goose, and I know that you've been doing for most of or a long time now.
Yeah, for a real long time. I was born in Michigan, but I really lived in the Bay Area most of my life. And there I had a radio program on KPFA, which is the first listener-sponsored station ever in the world. And that was an avant-garde music program. We did a lot of remote recordings. And after I finished that program, I kept producing radio on and off. And one of the more interesting ones was a 22-week series I did with Matthew Fox, defrocked Catholic theologian who ran into Pope Benedict or Cardinal Ratzinger, the same guy in different situations, and eventually wound up being kicked out of the order. But so Matthew and I did this really wonderful show where he would interview people who were doing some interesting things in the world as a result of their faith. It was called Spirit in Action. And since that time, I also produced a few programs in a series called Days of Wonder, which was the mostly Jewish and Islamic spiritual mystical holidays. So the High Holy Days, the mystical side of Hanukkah, Ramadan, things like that. And so just in general, staying in the middle of all this.
So you have been, now tell me about the formats for those shows. Have those been podcasts? Have they been radio shows?
Okay. Sure. The name of the podcast is Love in a Dangerous Time. And right now I'm still negotiating with Bruce Coburn's publisher to see if I can use the song Lovers in a Dangerous Time as my theme. But that'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? But the program, you know, I'm a total addict of homebrewed Christianity. I just think it's the best thing ever. And the more I listen to it, the deeper my understanding of my faith and other people's faith gets. This is hardcore theological discussion, if anybody out there has not encountered it. Hardcore theological discussion that's always very interesting and fun, because the two guys that do the podcast are really, they're both funny, and they're both working in the community. They both go to Wild Goose all the time, and so they're just great guys. But I'm going to leave the hardcore theology to them.
So we're going to leave the hardcore theology for, we're going to say homebrewed Christianity. We're going to give them a shout out.
We want some props.
And who are the hosts on that, Russ?
The Trip Fuller and Bo Sanders are the two guys that do that. They're both like early 30s. They live in Los Angeles area, and they're both like inches away from their PhDs, and they're just two. Wow. They've had an incredible impact out there in the world.
Uh-huh.
So,
great.
And because of the kind of the space that they've created for this kind of radio, which is what podcasting really is, I'm going to jump in there. And basically, in Love in a Dangerous Time, we'll be looking at three main threads of discussion. We will, of course, be interviewing authors who have new books, because that's always fun to do, and a lot of them are really fascinating. And they may be not necessarily on any particular theme, always, of course, in the development of progressive theology. But so people like mm-hmm. Brian McLaren or John Dominic Crossan, Sarah Miles, people like that. Then the second strain is people of faith who are doing really innovative and significant things in the world, applying their work to the justice work at hand. And so some of them have been doing high-profile things like around mass incarceration or Palestine or immigration. But a lot will also be people who are doing things on a local level that are not so well-known but are really good examples of how you can, being a person of faith, actually do something more than just give money to a hospital every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many projects that are really going a lot deeper than that, and I think in a much deeper way, developing people's relationship to the gospel, for instance. Now, one good example, a quick one, is a restaurant in Boone, North Carolina, called The Farm.
I know all about it. Yeah, The Farm Cafe.
Yeah.
We've actually had Tommy Brown on a previous episode of Spiritually Speaking, talking quite a bit about The Farm Cafe. Have you been there?
I have not, but Tommy is my brother from another mother at Wild Goose. We spend a lot of time working on this thing together, and he'll be a guest too. So there'll be even more around, and he's on the board of The Farm. But the best thing about The Farm is they give free lunches to homeless people in exchange for a voucher that they've earned somehow, and then other people come and they actually pay for their lunch, so they have a budget and they also get a lot of donated food. But the best thing about it is that once they get that tray, it's sort of set up so there can't be a ghetto for the poor people. Because one of the really most disgusting things in our culture is the way we make poor people invisible. And we don't treat them like human beings. It's brutal what just regular folks do to people on the street who are panhandling for their own survival.
Yeah.
So I'm really partial toward programs that really address that.
Yeah, no, and the Farm Cafe, I just have to say, Russ, I've eaten there many times
we've been in
Boone visiting with Tommy and his wife Karen, who are my husband and I's closest friends, and we have just been so impressed, and I've talked about this on the show multiple times, the ways in which that is such an amazing model for ministry and the ways that local communities are doing ministry in new and innovative ways. And plus, the food at the Farm Cafe, and farm, by the way, for everyone's understanding, means for all regardless of means.
Mm-hmm.
So you pay full price, which is a very affordable lunch, even at full price. I think it's $8 for
I'm looking at the menu right now.
Yeah, and the food is incredible. They have amazing chefs who work very hard and do food in a number of different styles. It's right on the main street in Boone, North Carolina, which is a charming town in the mountains. Anyway, and the concept is just so amazing. So I'm so glad, Russ, that you're going to have Tommy on your program to talk about the Farm Cafe and to continue to lift up these voices of faith that we can, share and sort of create this buzz. I know that I've been doing this show now for a year, and Rebecca just joined me at the one-year mark.
Yay!
So wonderful, wonderful to have a conversation partner, a musician, to so that there are shows where she and I just talk about our faith journey and being women in ministry and some of the challenges, but a lot of the joys that we experience.
Mm.
But it's also been wonderful to have on authors and innovators and pastors who are doing amazing things. I just want to lift up for our listeners, if you did not listen to our last show, which was also pre-recorded, please, please, please do. It was an amazing show. We had Reverend Sarah Buteau, who is the associate pastor at the First Churches of Northampton, Mass., and she's the founding pastor of a community called Common Ground, which is a farm-to-table dinner church in their community, which has become a ministry of the First Churches of Northampton. And it's just it's so exciting to see the ways in which progressive Christians and Christians who are really trying to follow Jesus in a very serious way. They take the faith seriously, they take the Bible seriously, they take the world seriously, and bringing forth those voices of folks who are really trying to think about how can we do church in a way that is inviting to, particularly to folks who have felt excluded by the church for such a long time.
Right, exactly. You know, before we go further, I want to lift up Sarah Buteau. She's a friend of mine, too. My God, we must be related.
We must be.
But Sarah is one of the most outstanding human beings in the world. She's just totally lives what's in her heart and does it in a very effective way. She's quite something, and I just think she's fabulous. So.
It's exciting to see so many people. I think I got this sort of at Wild Goose. I live in New York City too, and it's tough to sometimes see the good in the world, and it's exciting to see real people that you see every day doing really good things and really, living that as their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's really inspiring. And, it's not just somebody that you see on TV, or it's not a policy that that gets legislated. It's just the way people live. And that's really an amazing I think that's an amazing opportunity to see people like that every day.
So,
Russ, how did you get involved with doing media from the beginning? I mean, you said you were raised in the Bay Area, or you spent most of your life in the Bay Area. How did you? I mean, was this always a passion of yours? Was this something that you fell into or went into intentionally? Just curious about how you got to be involved in doing media and production work.
Well, it did start with, for some reason, I've always really loved radio. And especially when I got to the Bay Area and heard KPFA and realized that you could do some pretty amazing things with radio. It wasn't just some kind of a, playlist that just, turn it on and you have a cup of coffee. And people at KPFA are all very committed to what they're up to, and the shows really reflect that. So, when I was able to join KPFA and do my programs there, I was so fulfilled. I mean, it was just a wonderful experience to be able to do that. And that's why I've kind of stuck with it all these years. And with the advent of podcasts, it's really possible for anybody to actually put it out, put what they really feel is important out there in the world, and potentially talk to people who are interested in that same topic. And and then you have to build your own audience. I've been very lucky with this one. I mean, we haven't launched yet, but already being on your program is a big thing for me, because people will hear about it who might be interested in the podcast. Trip Fuller interviewed me at Wild Goose, and he'll play that in early September. We're going to launch on September 8th. So there is a community of people out there who really want to explore things and and do something about it. And we've all mentioned Wild Goose many, many times. For anybody who doesn't know what it is, and I'll bet if you're a regular listener to this show, you know what it is because Jen is always there. And I guess, Rebecca, you're there too. We didn't meet. We'll have to fix that if we both live in New York.
No, yeah, we'll definitely have to fix that. I've been there 2 years in a row.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, Wild Goose is very much at the basis of why this podcast exists for me. Because I see people who are coming to an understanding of their faith where it actually enriches the world that they're in, and that's what they get out of their faith rather than something personal, some private little reward that they get. But instead, what they're getting is the ability to step into the world and do something. And Wild Goose really, really makes that come alive. And so that's a big part of everything that I'm doing these days. I've been to 4 Wild Geese, and all those times stage managing the main stage. So it's a big part of my life. You know, there's a third strain also to the podcast, which relates to this, and it's about building community. There's a lot of people these days who are questioning whether the church in its present form is really designed in a way that it can survive into the future, and people are looking at alternative ways to make community and digging in to try to figure out what these communities are really for. So there's a lot of experimentation going on. There's a lot of very good critical thinking going on. And so a lot of what we do on Love in a Dangerous Time will be looking at some of these experimental congregations, the new monastics, some of the new creative experiences like the Wild Goose Festival. And, I think that's an important strain. I mean, you know, we always do what we need to do in our own lives, and this, of course, is something that's very much on my own mind lately within my own experience. So I'll be finding some very interesting people to talk to about this.
Russ,
and that's just the thing. No, go ahead, Rebecca. I was just going to say that's the thing that this all of this is creating. It's helping people to understand that maybe the way they've been thinking about their faith is not, they're not the only ones. Because very often in our traditional faith communities, people who have had somewhat of a different understanding of theology or a different understanding of what it meant for them personally to follow Jesus, that they were on the outside, that they weren't, that there wasn't anybody else who thought the way that they did. And I think as we're creating these shows where we're lifting up a very different way of being church and a different way of expressing Christianity, that we're letting people know you're not alone. And I'm so happy that we can have you on the show. I would love to have the guy from, Hard?
Homebrew
Christianity, on the show. I plan to have Mark Sandlin from his podcast on the show as well, just because I think it's so helpful when we can lift up each other's voices so that we are creating a buzz. I mean, the beautiful thing is that certainly with podcasts and with the work that we do, we're not in competition with each other. We're in community with each other. And and working together, we can help to reach many, many more people. I'm sorry, Rebecca, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I know you had a question for Ralph.
I love what you just said. And so this may be a little bit off topic, I guess, but I'm really fascinated with your work with Wild Goose, mainly because I have this nosy curiosity about sort of the behind-the-scenes work that you get to be a part of and sort of getting to see, you know, these great people that we all, you know, admire and respect, but oftentimes, you know, a little bit at a distance. And so I'm just, you know, getting to work with them and be around them and just also just the physical work that it takes to run a stage at a festival. Can you just give us a little insight on that?
Well, first of all, the planning process is actually pretty complicated at Wild Goose because they have a self-submission policy. So it's kind of like a conference where you submit papers you'd like to read. People send an outline of what kind of music they want to do or what kind of a workshop they'd like to lead. And then it's gone over by a committee of folks that's gathered from around, you know, I come down from New York to Asheville for meetings, and, you know, people come from the Midwest and further south, and nobody comes from California yet for those meetings, but it's bound to happen. Mm-hmm. And so that's a pretty arduous process, and eventually it gets winnowed down to what we want, and then the actual shaping of the festival starts to take place. When you get there, I got there, the festival started on Thursday evening. I got there Tuesday afternoon, and it was an absolute beehive. There were probably 100 volunteers there on Tuesday, about 300 volunteers altogether. And so they were decorating tents and moving equipment around. And, you know, all the tents are put in by tent companies, but then from then on, it's all Wild Goose people setting up sound systems and signage and all kinds of things. It's a lot of work, and people come as volunteers and just do it. It's just a very exciting group to be with. And then during the festival, you asked about the stage. I mean, I the bad part about what I do is I'm stuck at the stage all day. The good part is that there are some talks there that are always very interesting. And, of course, the music is why I'm there. You know, I've been producing concerts for about 30 years, mostly in California. And so this is, I feel very comfortable on the stage. And it's basically, I love it because when you're doing that, you're totally submerged in it. There's nothing else. You know, you're just doing this important work of making the music sound good and making people who are performing or doing a workshop or whatever, making them feel comfortable and get them up and running. So it's very gratifying, and I really, you know, it sounds like we're mostly talking about a Wild Goose Festival here, and there's a good reason for that, because it's a very special thing. So anybody who hasn't been, you got to go next year.
Yeah,
it is
go.
Indeed. I mean, Rebecca and I, on the first festival that we went to, we did a presentation together, and that was great fun, and mm-hmm. it rained the whole festival. We camped.
Yes.
And this past year, I went as a spiritual direction volunteer, and Rebecca also came for part of it. And
yes.
This year, because of the rain the former year, we didn't tent. We rented a cabin not far from the festival grounds, but there's just something really amazing about,
yeah.
You know, being in a community and being in that space where you see some people that you know, but you're constantly meeting new people, hearing new ideas, being exposed to really different ways of thinking about our faith and the work that we do, and just continuing to sort of evolve. That's what I find so gratifying mm-hmm. at being at the Goose, that even though I've sort of been immersed in this progressive Christian thought and community for some time, even I'm continually evolving and continuing to be challenged by some of the speakers that I hear. I just want to put in a plug. You are listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. We are here every second and fourth Monday of the month at 8 p.m. Tonight, our show happens to be pre-recorded. Otherwise, you would be given a phone number to call in and be part of our conversation. We are really looking forward to our next show, which will be on July 28th. At 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Please listen live. We will be on live. We are hoping to have Jason Herod, who is a singer-songwriter, with us on that show. And then we'll be here every second and fourth Monday of the month. If you'd love to interact with us, we would love that. We love to know who's listening to us, who is interested. If you have thoughts about people that you would like to see on our show in the future, find us on our Facebook page. There's a Facebook page that's just entitled Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca, and we are really excited about being able to interact with people in new and different ways. You can also find all of our shows in an archived version on the website for my work, which is Spiritual Energy Engagement and Direction, which is SEED, S-E-E-D, and our website is at www.seedspiritualcoaching, and there's a tab that says Spiritually Speaking. You go to that tab, and the page shows all of our pre-recorded, our previous shows that are all available on the archive. They're also available for download on iTunes. So I just wanted to put in that plug. Rebecca, you wanted to move forward?
Yeah. Well, and I'll also let folks know you can tweet me at my Twitter handle is anewrebecca. And if you want to, you know, ask me questions or get, you know, give feedback about the show, I'd love to hear that. And also to reiterate what Jen said, if you have guests or people that you would like to hear speak, we'd love to, you know that as well. And you can also look me up on Facebook. And I am also at the First Presbyterian Church in the city of New York. I'm actually not there right now, but I welcome anyone to contact me there. I'm the director of Family Music Ministries there, and so you're welcome to contact me there about anything and everything. So,
perfect.
Yeah,
great to have Rebecca's at A New Rebecca, just to on Twitter, just to reiterate that, and I'm at Coach Rev Jen with one N on Twitter. So, Russ, if people are interested more in the podcast, they want to be able to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Well, Twitter would probably be the best way for now. I'm at Common Soul Prod, P-R-O-D. My company is Common Soul Productions. And there will be a website going up soon. Right now I'm experimenting with it, getting it tweaked out, and then that will be loveinadangeroustime.net. So, and that will also be where the podcast will live when it appears.
Great.
Awesome. So I know you've been thinking some time, and you gave us different categories of folks that you've got coming up. Do you have any, I know that you mentioned earlier that you've got Tommy Brown lined up to come on and talk about the Farm Cafe. Do you have other folks who you know will be coming up in the next few months, new on the podcast?
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to understand, I was on Mount Olympus for a few days at the Wild Goose Festival. So Sarah Miles will be coming on. Frank, no, I'm going blank.
Frank Schaefer
will be coming on. He's written so many books on so many different topics. He'll be really fun to talk to. Brian McLaren will be on. I'm just racking them up. Also, some people talking about community, a guy named Jason Sorbakken from New York, from Brooklyn, has an intentional community that he works with, and also he has a new book coming out. Peter Heltzel, who is one of my dear friends, and I know he's one of yours too, Jen, will be on. He's always got a new book, and he's also one of the most active faith leaders in progressive causes in New York. So he'll be on. He's the leader of the Micah Institute in New York.
Right.
And so there's going to be a lot of people. I don't think I'm going to have any trouble finding people to talk. I'm just going to have trouble finding time to edit it all. But I enjoy that a lot, so that'll be fine.
Yeah, no, that's great. Go ahead, Rebecca.
How do you envision, or how do you think about, you know, with traditional radio, you know, you said, and this is obvious, that it's more local and that you get sort of a local audience, and then with podcasts you can sort of go international. How do you feel community when you're talking to people all over the world and you can't see them?
Well, in that case, podcasts are better than radio because you can actually have a comment section on the website. I know that's a big part of homebrew Christianity. So people become regular commentators. You kind of know who they are, and then you meet them at Wild Goose or something, and it's kind of neat. But when I was doing actual radio in Berkeley, I had a sense that even though I was talking to a whole community, that in another way I was really talking to an individual, you know, maybe hundreds of them, hopefully hundreds and hundreds, but actually speaking to a human being who was listening. And that sort of is a way of really understanding the responsibility you have when you're doing this, and also feeling that you really need to be able to communicate well. So it's kind of a combination between the two. But mostly it's about feedback in terms of feeling that community of the show. And then as listenership goes up and all that kind of thing, it does snowball. I think Tripp and Bo, who are, again, I'm referring to them from Homebrew, they have become rock stars. And literally any place they go, they connect with people and people connect with them and everybody wants to meet them. And they get a lot of shows because of the excitement that their podcast has already caused. So
right.
It'll be like that. Although I could never even dream to be as successful as they have been.
Humbly. Well, it's interesting. You never know. I have been fascinated and really pleasantly surprised by the number of people who know about the show, where, like, I'm so glad you're doing that. I think, you know, at some point it's very easy to fall into thinking, nobody listens. There are not that many people listen to the show. But it does get passed along from person to person to person. And I've had so many people have said, I'm so glad you're doing that. I'm so glad that this voice or this understanding of Christianity is getting out there, is on the internet. As I said, if we can all continue to support each other's different niches, you know, this show in particular, I haven't mentioned this, but everybody who's listening to us knows that it's on Blog Talk Radio. So this has a slot on Blog Talk Radio as part of the Life Coach Radio Network. That comes out of the fact that I do spiritual life and leadership coaching. So spiritually speaking came out of my coaching network, which established itself a year ago as the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. So it's a different way to sort of enter the conversation, and people find us not necessarily maybe even knowing that they are looking for a more or less Christian-based conversation, and yet they find it. And for me, that's really exciting. It's just another avenue of a way to invite people into the conversation that might be different than the folks who would find Homebrewed Christianity or who would find your show, for example.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's just that one aspect, you know, word of mouth is mostly how these podcasts get listened to. And we're going through a real metamorphic time in the religious community as a whole, but especially in Christianity for us. And there are a lot of people out there who are going through the motions at their church or in whatever community they're, you know, is related to their spirituality, and not being satisfied, just feeling like they're not really doing what they're supposed to be doing, or that things don't make sense. And one ideal kind of person listening is somebody who's listening all by themselves, because they're not sure there's anybody else in their community who they can even talk to about this, but who are really, really interested in creating a different way of of doing faith. And excuse me. And so even if that one person is out there listening on headphones and pretending to be listening to music or whatever, that is very much a person we want to talk to.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask you, was well, right in line with it. I'm curious, you know, we talk a lot about, here in the podcast and radio world, we talk a lot. But I'm curious if you think that this is changing the way that we worship and the way that we function as Christians.
Well, I hope so. I think that's really one of the main issues. At Wild Goose, again, we go to Wild Goose, but a large part of that community is folks who grew up in a very fundamentalist environment, and they've, in their lives, just been able to understand that that's not a good way of looking at the Bible or your own role in the world, but they don't know what they should be doing. And so this is like that single person with the headphones on. So things are changing. One thing, you know, I mentioned Sarah Miles earlier, and if people have not read her book, I read her first book, which is Take This Bread, and her new book is called City of God, which I have not started yet. But she says that the food pantry that she organized at her church in San Francisco is not social service, it's worship. And, just having the ability to look at the situation and in a fresh way is really important. And there's a lot of that going on. When, you know, at the Wild Goose, again, there was the Carnival de Resistance was part of the weekend. They were set up in their own area and they had their own program, kind of independent of the rest of the festival. This is very mind-blowing, kind of reminiscent of the early days of the hog farm, and some of the audience are going to be of my era and remember the hog farm from back in the day. And in the summer they go from just different communities and put on these carnivals. Well, they did a big version of it at Wild Goose. A mind-blowing, way off the charts new kind of worship. And most of the people that I've talked to about it just loved it. They felt like they really got something out of it. So that's what we're going for. It's a new world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also not just a new world for us to have a nicer worship experience, but we have to really begin to understand that if we really do take our faith seriously, we have to be the kind of person who can participate wholeheartedly in changing the world and making justice our number one priority for everything. And that's just got to be the way we are on a knee-jerk basis, you know. Some people say, you know, well, I'm a music lover. Well, it has to be on that level. It's like I'm a justice lover. I just gravitate towards that kind of work. And we need to foster that. We need to help the churches and their communities need to help train people for that. Turn us into the kind of people who can really do the job.
What's the biggest challenge in that kind of work?
Well, I think for one thing, I think a lot of Christians are out there doing a lot of this work anyway, but they're not doing it as Christians. They just sort of show up for the meetings and take on responsibility. But the hardest problem of that particular aspect of it, turning our Christian communities into communities of creative transformation of us, of our individuals, into that kind of person. One of the hardest problems is that I think for a long time, hundreds of years, our church has been selling a product, really, and that sounds kind of crude, but selling a product that you're going to feel better if you go to church every Sunday, for whatever reason. And I think that needs to be looked at, and really we need to move past that and put that aside. That I don't think that's what it ever was about. It's just something that it puts butts in the seats, to use the theater term, and it gets change in the basket when it goes by. But it's not really what our communities are for. And if they're not for that, maybe they won't have as many butts in the seats, and they'll have to reconfigure the communities with that in mind. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have to make a claim. I have been reading an amazing book by Marcus Borg and John Dominic Crossan called The First Fall and Reclaiming Paul's Radical Message. And
yeah, that's a great book.
It's a wonderful book, and it's a wonderful book for us, I think, as progressive Christians, because it takes the Bible seriously and doesn't, you know, kind of fluff off, well, you know, we're uncomfortable with this, so we're not going to talk about this. And one of the challenges, certainly, that we get from our more fundamentalist and fundamentalist evangelical brothers and sisters is that we don't take Jesus seriously. We don't take the Bible seriously. And if you take the Bible seriously, and I'm getting to the point in the book, I'm almost finished with it, where he basically makes the argument that, let's face it, folks, we've written all of these books trying to unpack the letter to the Romans. I mean, and I have books on my I have books ad infinitum, page after page after page, of trying to unpack what this letter means. Now, let's face it. This was something that was taken to Rome by Phoebe, who was a deacon in the church, and taken from Paul. And yes, it's a long letter, but it was completely understandable to the church at Rome. They didn't have to do a, you know, a 500-800 page unpacking of what the theological implications of this letter were. They understood it. And so if we want to read that letter in the way that it was intended, we have to read that letter with first century Jewish Christian eyes. We need to understand what Paul was saying in the shorthand that Paul was using, and what he means by, for example, you know, when I preach Christ crucified. What what was that shorthand for?
Right.
You know, certainly, and the salvation that Paul was talking about. You know, really, it's very interesting that there really wasn't, and I'm going to get a little deep here, and I usually would leave this up to my brothers over at Home Group Christian, but what does it mean when Paul uses that phrase, Christ crucified? And what did that, what was the understanding of that to his audience? It was only 1,000 years ago that the understanding of what many of our churches understand is a substitutionary atonement, which means that Christ literally had to die because in order to pay for our sins.
Right.
That wasn't proposed until the 11th century by Anselm. I mean, that just wasn't even an understanding that the early Christian church, and certainly not an understanding that Paul had when he was writing Romans. So you think about, okay, this was something that was that we have sort of taken as, quote-unquote, the gospel, and yet it was laid, the understanding of substitutionary atonement was laid on top of the book of Romans. And then, once we did that, then you have to spend 800 pages trying to unpack it. But if you take that, you know, if you can just sort of, you know, I feel like, you know, where you're in a place where you're trying to pry off, you know, a big, you know, 1,000 pounds instead of 1,000 years worth of overlay on this book. You know, I feel like I'm underneath this big piece of cement trying to pry it off of the ground so that the light can then grow grow underneath this this piece of cement, for lack of a better image. But that's exactly what comes to mind. And if we can just sort of help to open space where we question some of these traditional understandings, or at least go back and try to unpack, where did this understanding of substitutionary atonement, of Christ literally dying for our sins, where did that come from? And is that really what Paul is talking about? And certainly Borg and Crossan make the argument in a very compelling way that, no, this is not what Paul was writing about. Let's really look at this with those very first century Jewish Christian mystic eyes and understand what it was that Paul was writing about and why it was so understandable for the church at Rome.
Right.
They
That's one thing I always
look
for is, like, what did the people who heard this letter, when it was read to them, what did they actually hear? Because, you know, if you said to somebody, I'm the decider, right, everybody knows, in this culture, everybody knows you're talking about a silly thing that George Bush said a few years ago.
Right.
And, you know, but you don't have to say that. You just say, I'm the decider, and it's kind of an ironic way to say, I get to make my decision here. But, you know, there were things like that back then that were in these letters that nobody questioned or thought about as in having any root particularly in time, but they did.
Right.
And now, 2,000 years later, when you translate them, and often the translation is part of the problem, but you just can't make heads or tail of it, and it winds up being, they wind up spiritualizing everything and making it all like it made people feel a warm presence or something like that. I always wonder when you look at it, the progenitor and the first four leaders of our movement were executed by the state. John the Baptist, Jesus, Peter, Paul, and somebody else. Oh, James. James was one of the leaders in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all executed by the Romans. And whenever Paul went into a village or a city, he wound up getting kicked out, ultimately, or had to run for his life or something, because there was something in this message that disturbed, that got the people excited and disturbed the power that be, to the point that they tried to get rid of this message. And when I grew up, I thought Jesus was crucified because he was a nice guy, and they just couldn't handle it. I mean, I don't know where that came from, but you know, and that's silly. That's a totally silly idea. There must be, we have to look in the Bible, and knowing the history, which Borg and Crossan have really helped us with, really makes it possible for us to look at these situations and really understand what was at stake for them, why this message was earth-shaking to these people. Because there must have been an exciting, supposedly earth-shaking message every day, just like we have it here. You know, there were a lot of people who called themselves Messiah and a lot of teachers. But Jesus is the one who started this huge movement. Why? What was so scary about it to the bad guys and so wonderful about it to the good guys? We have to look at that, and we have to try to apply what we learned from that to today and do things that are scary to the bad guys, you know?
I have that experience. I'm sorry. Jen, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say I have that experience with children. I work with children in my job, and, you know, talking about, you know, using a lot of cliches to teach, you know, say, you know, doing the right thing or, you know, helping your neighbor, those kinds of things really I find fall, they don't really ring with kids, but I find that when children are challenged in the way that that we talk about everyday things, when we talk to children about poverty and when we talk to them about you know, real life issues, and I find that kids can handle a lot more than we give them credit for, and whitewashing, for lack of a better term, whitewashing Jesus into like a nice man who people just didn't understand, I think is not doing anybody any favors, and it's certainly not allowing people, and in my case, children, to think critically and to think radically about what Jesus really did and why it was important and why it's important now. One of the big problems, you know, especially in larger churches, is that we don't have a lot of the younger crowd is sort of leaving. And my constant, you know, I'm always saying, you know, we don't challenge people to really think about why Jesus matters to us today. And I think that's the biggest, I think we're losing a lot of a lot of people because we underestimate what people can handle spiritually. And clearly they want it because they're going to places where they are being challenged spiritually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you know, our fear of, you know, of making people uncomfortable in the presence of God is, I think, pretty, it doesn't honor us as humans and as children of God.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And as we kind of are coming to the end of our time, I just want to remind folks that
it always goes so fast for listening.
We're good. We are not yet at the end, but I just want to thank people for listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. This is the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. We encourage you to listen to other shows that are on the Life Coach Radio Network. You can find our show as well as many others on LifeCoachRadioNetworks.com, which is the website. As we sort of begin to wrap up our time together today, I just want to thank Rebecca for that comment. I do think that you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the challenges, and this came up at the Wild Goose, was, you know, how do we educate our children in these understandings of Christianity that we have come to as adults in a way that is, you know, is understandable, is on their level, doesn't dumb it down. We teach these stories, that we teach Bible stories to children out of context. We don't really challenge them to think critically or to think about Jesus and an understanding of Jesus.
Right.
I mean, I think we all were raised with this understanding that, you know, Jesus was a nice guy and that's why he got killed. Well, let's face it, if Jesus had been a nice guy, he would have been no threat to the Roman authorities.
Right.
And that's exactly what Paul was talking about when he said, when I preach Christ, I preach Christ crucified. Crucified meant you were treason. You were a traitor. You were an enemy of the state. You were trying to bring the state down. They saved crucifixion and death on a cross because of its brutality, because of its public nature.
Mm-hmm.
They used that sparingly and specifically for enemies of the state. So when Paul says Christ crucified, he's saying all of that in two words.
Yeah.
And when he's talking about, you know, God's victory through Jesus, he's also comparing that to and the peace of Christ, or the peace of God in Jesus Christ. He's comparing that peace to the peace of Rome.
Yeah.
And all of these understandings and these words that we think of that are just so specific to the Bible and so specific to the ways that Paul described Jesus are all borrowed from the Roman culture, are all borrowed from their understanding of Caesar and of the Pax Romana, the peace of Rome versus the Pax Christi, the peace of Christ. And there's these wonderful, parallels between those two that once you understand the one, it makes it so much easier to understand exactly what Paul was saying, because everyone who heard Paul's letter had this basic understanding. It's exactly what you were talking about, Russ, with when you say the words, I'm a decider. Absolutely brings up for all of us in this pop culture what that means. Say, I am not a crook. Everybody
knows
that comes from. But 100 years from now, 1,000 years from now, 2,000 years from now, people won't, they might spend 800 pages just trying to unpack what it means that I am a decider. And why did, you know, Paul use that language? But we don't bother to go back and really see what the context was. And I think, you know, it really broke it all open for me when Krausen and Borg said, this had to have been understandable to the church at Rome.
Yeah.
They didn't stand there and scratch their heads wondering what it meant.
Right.
They got it.
Right.
And
right.
And so, you know, thinking again, thinking through that, thinking about how do we talk to our kids about our faith the way that we understand it. Yes, there's not a good progressive Christian curriculum, if you will, out there. So it comes kind of back to Brian McLaren's new book about that we make the road by walking, because we are called to just continue to live into this understanding of the way in which God loved the world. And I'm so excited, Russ, that you are going to be bringing forth this kind of understanding on your new podcast. And that is just, it's super exciting, certainly for me and for us and for our show. And it's really been wonderful to give you the opportunity to let our listeners know that this podcast is going to be coming, and to just continue to create this conversation and this community so that people, regardless of where they are, regardless of where they worship, they might begin to understand that they're not alone and that there are other folks who are thinking critically, who are really wrestling with the same issues that they're wrestling with. So I want to give you, Russ, an opportunity to tell people how they can, again, plug into the podcast once it starts, talk a little bit about your launch before we close tonight.
Well, thanks, Jen. And before that, I just want to thank you. This is very generous and, from my standpoint, very lucky that I get to be on the show with you and talk about the podcast with your audience. I appreciate it very, very much. So thank you both for this opportunity. If people want to find the podcast, it will be launched on September 8th. And I don't know what the first program will be yet, but somewhere probably in August, the website will appear, and there will be, you know, whatever information I have will be updated often on the website. And it's the URL is Love in a Dangerous Time. It's a lot of typing. .net. Love in a Dangerous Time. .net. And you can write your 800-page theological tome on what that Love in a Dangerous Time means, if you want. Or maybe we all just know, you know.
It's great. It's really exciting. Russ Jennings, Common Soul Productions, the Love in a Dangerous Time podcast. Again, I just want to remind those who are listening to us, our next show will be July 28th. We are hoping to have Jason Harris, who is a singer-songwriter, musician, on with us to talk about his work. He was with all of us at Wild Goose, which was really exciting. We got a chance to hear him, and we're looking forward to that. We are always here on the second and fourth Mondays of the month from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 5 to 6 for our friends out on the West Coast. And it's been really exciting for me to have this opportunity to be with you, Russ, and Rebecca, as always. Wonderful to have you as co-host on this show.
I love it.
If anybody wants to connect with us, reach us on Facebook, right?
That's right. Come on to Facebook.
Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. Come on our Facebook page. You'll get to see our faces for a hot minute. And let us know what you want to hear. Let us know if there's if there are writers, thinkers, doers, people in your community who really deserve a shout-out for the important work that we're doing, that they're doing. We want to make sure that we're able to lift those voices up and help them to get the word out about what they're doing. We appreciate our listeners, our first-time listeners, as well as our long-time listeners, and just feel so blessed to be able to do this show on the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. So for myself and Rebecca, and again, thank you, Russ. It has been a joy to have you on the show.
Thank you,
it's
Russ.
Been wonderful. Thanks, Jen. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Russ, and thank you all for listening.
Good night.
Good night.